Yeah, I made that later. That's right.
We have another go around, right?
I'm gonna give it my best here, I'm hoping that they did that better than us around.
I mean, all right.
Yes, it is.
That's it, so I'm sure.
Next time I hear a horse. Susan, you have a dog, I guess I got her.
Yeah, they have, you were gonna say, you're gonna go to some sessions.
That's right.
One year.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I have no idea where it's money.
So you mean they have enough?
Well, this, yeah, they talk about, you should get some in. They have a kitchen.
Good, well, what's the next?
Did you hear from Nick Houston?
Yes, I did.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
5 minutes ago.
Not really.
Why not?
You can get a copy of it. On the, yeah, I thought you'd get a kick out of it. Roadie.
Which one are you interested in?
No, she was just curious. The teleconference, she'd go for, she's the moderator for the teleconference.
Yeah.
She should hook up the people.
Which one do you want to do first?
Is Reps and Larson here or not?
Here, no, I'm not sure if there's...
They're still debating the budget bill.
Okay, well, we'll take up the other one then first. Deregulation.
Okay. And everyone is online right now.
Oh, they are, huh?
There's Anchorage and Metsu, Dr.
A what?
Dr. Barbara Stevens in Connecticut.
Doctor?
Doctor.
On garbage?
Garbage bill?
You bet.
This is her resume. The garbage haulers. She's got expertise on impacts of deregulation.
Okay. Where's she living?
Connecticut.
Wow.
This is proof, though.
I think we should go back there and have a hearing.
That there's a $100 surcharge on every policy out of policy.
Yeah.
That's what they told us they worked on.
And enjoy insurance. Okay,
Susan,
well.
Susan Knowles will also be online shortly.
Okay. We'll try and as soon as we get a quorum.
Yeah, wrong.
Thank you.
think you did a very good job.
Have somebody testify on, well, on teleconference, or is it going to be here? Okay, yeah, we'll do that. Okay.
The prize will be $135,000 for the Ice Classic.
$135,000? Well, if I don't have to split it with someone, that'll be all right.
Hey, you could buy a bigger boat, huh?
Not for $135,000.
Don't freight your other one in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What do they, you figure, like that? Basically, about $300,000?
Which one?
Yours.
$150,000.
Not that I'm interested. I've got two sites.
Did you?
Not that many. Flat bottom ones, push barges. Take you up there this summer sometime.
I want to go up there and get a moose. You shoot one moose on that river boat or not?
You can't, on a boat.
It's just rounded up. It's way down. Everybody stick a boat on the beach and shoot.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody does it very often.
I do.
Pretty hard to shoot it. So they have to be a good shot in front of a boat.
Is that moving target? So,
all right.
Oh, all the garbage people are here.
No, they're sanitary
disposal
engineers.
They've all been in my office harassing me.
Labor and Commerce, please come to order. President Senator Coghill, Senator Fick, Senator Eliason. We have three bills before the committee this afternoon. We're on teleconference, so we'll take up Senate Bill number 298. And are we hooked in with whom?
Yes, we have all everyone. Anchorage, Matsu, Susan Knowles, and the doctor. Dr. Stevens.
Okay, fine, thank you. Sorry I didn't have the mic on, but we just called the Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We have three bills before the committee this afternoon. We have, first one will be Senate Bill number 298. It's an act relating to deregulation of public utilities furnishing collection disposal services of waste material. We have a number of teleconference sites online, along with Dr. Connecticut.
Stevens.
Who is going to, Dr. Stevens in Connecticut. Excuse me, Senator Fakes. And we have Ask Public Utility Commission's Susan Knowles is online. We have Anchorage and Matsu in. And Senator Fakes.
Mr. Chairman, did you get the statement from David Brandon of Alaska Fiberglass Manufacturing regarding Senate Bill 298? Okay, could we have a copy of that statement for the committee? I have it, Ab.
Okay, first we'll go to teleconference. I believe there are people who have been waiting there. We'll take up, can I see the list, please?
Oh.
Okay, fine. We'll first go to Fairbanks.
It's the ones that are shipped. Sorry, I'm sorry. Anchorage or Matsu.
Okay, well, where is it? Okay, we'll go to Anchorage. Interesting that Fred mentions that nobody in this field and they don't have anybody in both countries.
Can you hear me, Senator?
Very well, please, continue.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Mark Williams. I am the past president and current board member of Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling. As you know, ALPAR is a private nonprofit organization of businesses and environmental and community leaders formed in the early 80s to spearhead a private sector attack on state litter's problem and encourage Alaskans to recycle. garbage collectors, I guess. Last year, we ran youth litter patrols in 38 communities, removed about 950,000 pounds of trash from Alaska highways and parks. We also consider ourselves to be the conscience of the community, encouraged Alaskans and of all ages to change their wasteful habits, take control of their trash problems through recycling, and we are extremely concerned about Senate Bill 298 currently being considered. We think our efforts are paying off. At Alpar, we have 50 communities on recycling currently. We collect 70,000 pounds of cans last year from Bush communities, 330,000 pounds of newspaper, 45,000 pounds of glass. And the trashing of our countryside is a serious, unsightly problem, one that Alaskans and the rest of America can no longer ignore, obviously. But it's just part of a much larger problem of how Alaska and America thinks, acts, and deals with growing mountains of garbage. It's a problem that defies a quick solution, and that's the reason I'm here today. Alaska and America need a long-term solution to its trash problem, one based on a well-thought-out policy. It needs a plan of action that thoughtfully tackles the problem from all sides. I don't know at this point, because this bill, we only recognized the bill's introduction 2 days ago, whether the deregulation of garbage utilities in the state is a good move or not. I don't know if the deregulation of garbage utilities will make our job in Alpar easier or worse. We frankly haven't had time to look at it. I do know that the pitfalls of adopting a band-aid approach to what we think is a serious policy issue, particularly during the crux of the closing days of the legislature. We are familiar with the problems that can develop with legislative moves when the legislature moves too fast and too little input on issues of this importance are done. In this case, many of the critical players, I think, are not here and have not had time to analyze the issue, much less form an opinion. With the Alaskan oil spill, the expertise in this area seems to me to be tied up in Valdez. I encourage you to delay action on this issue until you have had a chance to address the policy issue and consult with all groups that have a stake in the environmental issues affecting Alaska. If you think it would be helpful, Alpar would welcome an opportunity to assist you in this undertaking. And I think together we can create a cleaner Alaska for tomorrow. And I would encourage you at this point to at least postpone any action on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions? Senator Fakes.
Could I have what your acronym ALPAR stands for one more time, please?
Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling.
Thank you. There's no... the committee itself is not going to rush anything through. I can promise you that. We're just beginning a process, and as it proceeds, we'll see what we're going to do. But it's an information gathering position we're in now, so I suspect we'll need a lot of help down the line if we're going to pursue it. So could we go to Wasilla with Paul Robinson?
This is Paul.
Would you care to testify?
Yeah, I'd like to hold and wait till later after I've re-listened and reviewed some of the other testimony.
Everybody wants to listen first. Thank you. We'll come to Juneau then. We have some people who have signed up to testify here. First, we'll hear from the Alaska Refuge Utilities Association. You just take a seat and throw that switch forward, and we'll be on teleconference.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Scott Carver, and I represent the Alaska Refuge Utilities Association. We are opposed to the deregulation move at this time. There are a number of reasons that we are. We think we can break them down. But number one, the environmental concerns. I think they need to be addressed more than they have been to date. The safety issue of allowing very many trucks on the road at the same time needs to be looked at. And we believe the total cost to the consumers will increase if you have more and more trucks going around picking up the same amount of trash. We have a proposal that we'd like to talk to you about. It includes simplified rate regulation, which we believe the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. One of the reasons the Alaska Public Utilities Commission would like to deregulate the refuse industry is because they spend an inordinate amount of time on refuse. I've got some information here that I'd like to pass on to you that shows that that's not necessarily the case. The other issue that we are supporting in our proposal is recycling. We are willing to take on additional responsibilities in recycling. We believe wholeheartedly in it. And at this point, if you have any questions, I'd like to let Jack Cohane from Anchorage Refuge and Alaska Recycling Center talk to you about that subject.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee at this time? Go ahead, Jack.
About 2 years ago, we got heavily involved in recycling, invested over $500,000 in equipment to recycle cans and paper and cardboard, and we are working closely with Mark Williams and his All-Par group, the man that spoke first. And I think we have a real good partnership working towards recycling and keeping the community clean. And I feel if we have deregulation, this bill goes through without, you know, further thought, this may jeopardize this whole program. And we do, like Sky said, we do have a counter proposal that you folks can study that will require us to get more involved in recycling, and I think that's what we'd like to do. And to not only just collect the refuse, but to recycle and do other things. And Fairbanks is involved in a heavy investment in trying to pelletize garbage. Juneau has a real heavy investment in burning it because there's no other place to put it. So I think all these things put together, we have to look at the heavy investment in these other areas other than just picking up the trash on the street. That's all I have.
Thank you. Jack, are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe it would be good to have all of them give us their names and where they represented from, because there's a lot of them here in this organization. They represent almost all of the Rail Belt area of the state and down here, I believe. So it might be nice for the record to know who all the gentlemen are and what part of the state they're from.
Senator Fix, they had the opportunity to sign up here. I wish they would have.
Okay. All right.
They can do that on the way out, I guess. Right. Senator Coghill.
Jack, do you have that proposal in hand now? Do you folks have it written? Would you prefer to give that to the committee at this time?
Yes, we'll hand it to you at this time.
Thank you. We have online in Connecticut Dr. Barbara Stevens. How are things back in Connecticut?
Everything's fine. We're starting to have springtime here.
Crocuses are out here.
Now we're still in England's up here. Would you proceed with your testimony? Thank you for being here this afternoon.
You're welcome. My name is Barbara Stevens, and I am the president of EcoData in Westport, Connecticut. By education and background, I am an economist, having received a PhD from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Previously, I was an assistant professor of business economics at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business in New York City. In 1977, I founded EcoData, and since that time, I've devoted my full time to consulting projects and research projects, largely relating to solid waste. I have directed several large-scale projects relating to the solid waste industry. The National Science Foundation funded a project which I began at Columbia University, and which EcoData continued from 1974 to 81. This project involved nationwide research concerning the relative efficiency and effectiveness of alternative organizational arrangements for refuse collection and disposal. And the project considered different levels of governmental regulation as factors affecting the cost to the customers. In 1983 through 1984, the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development funded a project to research factors affecting the cost of providing 8 different local government services. EcoData did this project, and we considered factors such as the degree of government regulation and the public sector, private sector identity of the provider of the services. One of the services studied in this project was refuse collection. In 1985, for a major private sector client, EcoData surveyed all cities in the United States with 1980 populations in excess of 25,000. The purpose of this survey was to determine the organizational arrangements for refuse collection, both residential and commercial, in the city survey, and where this service was provided by a private sector firm, the name of the firm. We identified cities where municipal entities performed collection with governmental employees, and those cities where service was regulated by the local government via contract or franchise, or where service was regulated by the state government, as is the case in the states of Washington, New Jersey, and Alaska. EcoData's major line of business involves direct consulting with local governments, providing assistance in improving the efficiency and quality of local services. More than half of our business relates to the delivery of refuse collection, recycling, and refuse disposal services. Typical assignments include provision of assistance in letting a municipal contract or franchise for refuse collection or recycling, assistance in improving the efficiency of a municipal operation via rerouting, improved equipment specifications, or enhanced maintenance procedures, or assistance in developing regulations. I have been asked to testify today by the Alaska Refuse Utilities Association, which contacted me yesterday and sent me several background materials. My opinion relating to Senate 298 bill is that the nature of the refuse collection and disposal industry is such that passage of this bill would probably result in increased prices to the customers of the present certificated holders. I'll explain that opinion a little more. In refuse collection, cost to the firm providing the service, and typically cost to prices charged to the customers, are affected by the scale of operations and the compactness of the route. Economies of scale in refuse collection can be measured by the number of collection vehicles operated by a firm. As the number of vehicles increases from 1 to about 5, average costs decrease by about 17%. This result was found in the work that was funded by the National Science Foundation. As the size of the firm increases with more than 5 vehicles, the average costs tend to remain flat or about the same. In another publication also emanating from the same research project, I found that there are significant economies of contiguity. Economies of contiguity are those savings in average costs associated with having customers located as close as possible together or more close together. In other words, it's associated with increases in route compactness. In any particular community, such compactness is maximized when a single vehicle or a single provider services every customer along a route. Residential refuse collection costs of a firm with the maximum economies of contiguity, those firms with exclusive territories, as in contracts or franchises or APUC certificate areas, typically have costs that are about 15% lower than are the costs of a firm serving customers that are also served, that live on streets where other firms also provide service. And this is the kind of service that prevails in a city such as Portland, Oregon. For commercial refuse collection, where travel times between customers may be a more significant factor in cost than in residential collection, economies of contiguity are at least as great as in residential collection. Economies of contiguity can only be captured by a community, and the consequent reduction of refuse collection costs passed on to customers if the community employs a regulatory system which ensures exclusive collection territories to individual collection firms or entities. The system presently in place in Alaska does ensure exclusive collection territories. Therefore, the costs to the collecting firms are minimized, and the rate regulators can pass these cost savings on to customers. Eliminating the present territorial regulation system and its associated mechanisms for rate regulation would jeopardize the provision of refuse collection services at the lowest possible cost to customers. How would cost-effective service be jeopardized? It would be jeopardized by allowing individual communities to decide how and whether to regulate rates and service areas for refuse collection. Many communities would decide not to regulate, and the resulting open competitive system would result, in my opinion, in higher costs to service deliverers and inevitable increases in costs to customers. My research does not indicate that rate regulation by state agencies is more effective than is rate regulation by local communities. In other words, I have not found that rates to customers are lower when regulation is conducted by a state agency than by a local governmental agency. However, I do believe that rate regulation by a state agency is likely to be more efficient, in other words, to cost less to implement, than would rate regulation by many individual local jurisdictions. Rate regulation by local jurisdictions typically takes the form of contracting or franchising for services. Most communities conducting effective contracting and franchising processes employ a consultant during the process. Typical fees for such assistance would range from $35,000 for a fairly small community to upwards of $200,000 for larger communities with complicated issues. It would probably cost more to regulate territories and rates on a community-by-community basis in this manner than at the state level in a unified manner. Failure to regulate territories and rates is expected to result in significantly higher prices to customers. As communities in Alaska desiring to regulate territories and prices already have such authority under the law, it is reasonable to assume that many communities, were Senate 298 to be passed, would opt for a no-regulation approach. The open competitive system that would result in these communities has higher costs and, other things equal, higher prices for customers than does a regulated environment, regulated either at the state or the local level, where exclusive collection territories are assured. In sum, the refuse collection industry is an industry where local or state regulations acting to establish exclusive service areas, either through territory allocations or through local contracting or franchising processes, can deliver prices to customers which are significantly lower than those achievable by a competitive, unregulated market, where prices are higher because firms do not enjoy the cost advantages associated with compact, contiguous routes. I recommend that regulation of the refuse hauling industry in Alaska not be repealed, and that the Commission consider a reevaluation of the strong and weak points of its existing system rather than a de facto deregulation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Stevens. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Would you gentlemen like to add to that? Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat Carney. I represent the Alaska Association of Refuse Haulers, and I'm from the Matanuska Valley, and we have Wasilla Refuse. And we've been hauling refuse in the Matanuska Valley for 30 years under the system of APUC regulation. And it's been a tough struggle to get the economies of scale in the Matanuska Valley that are necessary to operate efficiently. But in the last 7 or 8 years, we have achieved that. One of the benefits for the people in our community of having a hauler that's licensed and required to pick up is that people who live at some distance from the centers of population receive the same rates that those do in the condensed area. That's a slight subsidy from the urban area to the rural area, but it does require us to pick up refuse in areas where we couldn't afford to do so otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll have a Richard Joy from the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. First, my name is Richard Joy, and I'm Director of Health and Safety for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And first, I wanted to pass on Mayor Helms' regrets at not being able to come today to address you herself. She's in the air from Juneau, or from Anchorage to Juneau, as I understand it, and is unable to even contact you via teleconference. But this is a very important issue to the borough, and we really feel strongly that SB 298 should be passed. I hand out a sheet to you that talks about some issues and answers in garbage deregulation. And the main reason that regulations of the sort that the PUC have, the public utility type regulations, are in place are to protect the consumer. In the Fairbanks area, those regulations have been turned 180 degrees around, and they now protect the utilities at the detriment of the consumer. From the Fairbanks North Star Borough standpoint, we have a system of dumpsters that we have to, I won't say contract with because we can't sign a contract with them, but we have to hire the haulers that are licensed in those areas to haul those dumpsters. Because we don't have them under contract, we don't have any standards of performance they have to meet. There's no chance for competitive procurement of those dumpsters, and we don't have any control over the kind of rate increases that they are asking for. One hauler, local hauler in Fairbanks, currently has an 80% rate request before the PUC. We have contested that increase. However, under the PUC regulations, the rates aren't based on what the customer can afford. They're based on what the PUC gets in terms of financial data from the applicants and decides that should be awarded to pay off costs and reasonable rate of returns. This leaves the borough in a hard place. We are under financial difficulties. We do not have the money to fund rate increases. If we have a rate increase, we will probably have to cut back on the service. And this is one service, probably the most popular service the borough has. The other problem we have is we have a number of operational issues with our dumpsters, things that are happening. The fact that there's a legal monopoly in the area of refuse collection means that there's no reason for the private sector to provide innovative solutions to those kind of problems. We can't even get our two haulers to agree to standard containers. We have a completely different set of containers in the two hauling areas. The bottom line is that regulations should give improved service to the consumer, but the regulation of the Alaska hauling industry has resulted in poorer service and higher costs. We have heard that one solution maybe to this problem is to regulate the industry more, not less. Our standpoint is that there's a lot of regulation already in solid waste services in Alaska. Now, the APUC regulations are almost exclusively economic. They don't have anything to do with environmental issues. And the issue of whether deregulation of the PUC jurisdiction over utilities would cause environmental problems is a complete non-issue. You're talking about a transportation problem. The refuse haulers were originally licensed under Alaska Transportation Commission. They're in the business to move solid waste from point A to point B, just like any other freight company is in the business to move freight from point A to point B. If you deregulate that, you'll do a lot of things about that transportation, but you won't affect the disposal of garbage at all. The EPA, the Department of Environmental Conservation, even the Fairbanks North Star Borough have regulations covering disposal, and those regulations are multi-layered and in place to handle any sort of environmental issues. The PUC has recommended deregulation of garbage hauling for the last 10 years. Because that deregulation process has not been followed through on, they have attempted within the regulations they have on the books to increase competition in various municipalities and areas across the state. As a result, we have very differing regulatory structures, or I should say probably the structures for delivery of services in various communities. This has caused a very confusing problem. When somebody comes and tells you what it's like in Fairbanks, it's not the same as what it's in Juneau or Mat-Su or Kenai or Anchorage. That should be in our benefit of regulation. You should have the same setup statewide. You don't. So what we're dealing with is a problem that individual communities have tried to get a handle on across the state and haven't been able to because of the regulations. The PUC has tried to give the communities a little more chance to deal with the problems, and they haven't because of the regulations. The next question that is heard is, what would the impact, or would deregulation greatly increase environmental risk? I covered that already. I just want to stress that disposal and collection of garbage are two completely separate issues. There's a lot of debate in the country over the liabilities associated with improper disposal, but that does not mean that the same sort of debate and contentions carry over into the transportation end of things. The questions have been asked about what the impact of deregulation on the existing haulers will be. The fact is that we're dealing with an industry that has some equipment that costs more than an ordinary pickup truck, for sure, but we don't have multi-million dollar plants that would be required. This is an industry that, again, is transportation, not disposal. So there are other firms out there that would move into the market. The current existing well-managed companies would still have the edge because they already have the equipment and the experience and knowledge to be able to compete in that marketplace. But it would also mean that other companies that think they can provide improved service at reduced costs can also come in. The marketplace basically would regulate the industry. The economy is a scale issue, and the economies of contiguity, or however you say that fancy word you use, that were raised about the fact that one firm is better than a bunch, I think ignores a couple of important points. First of all, this is based on a nationwide study of greater than 25,000 populated communities. We have two, maybe three if you count Juneau, which is right at 25,000, communities that would qualify. For the larger communities, if they were all completely door-to-door pickup, I might tend to agree with Dr. Stevens. The fact is that in the smaller communities, 1,000 and 2,000 and 3,000 population communities we have around, they're so tightly put together or they have different ways of handling their garbage that I think the conclusions from that study fall apart. And in Fairbanks, the fact is that very few private customers currently have their garbage picked up from the front of their door. We have garbage collection service outside the cities of Fairbanks and North Pole. That covers about 25,000 people. We have the dumpster system, which most people use and pay taxes for. They also have the ability to get door-to-door pickup. Less than about 200 people have door-to-door pickup out of the 25,000. So we're talking about trying to deregulate an industry that has maybe one or two customers, or one customer mainly in the Fairbanks area, and that's the borough. We are not talking about an industry that would have to service thousands of individual units. The other issue that has been raised here is about trading continued regulation for increased recycling. And in fact, HB 310 has been introduced, which would do just that. The trouble with this argument is it, again, mixes collection and disposal issues. Most of recycling happens in disposal, unless you're talking about source separation, which is a term meaning that individual homeowners separated their residence and it's picked up separately and taken someplace. Because most of the waste recovery is tied to disposal, it would not involve any sort of APUC-regulated businesses. And disposal-linked recycling has not worked in Alaska. It was mentioned that Fairbanks is currently involved, the borough, in fact, in a multi-million dollar investment through the private sector to try to get recycling done at our landfill. We've The private sector has spent over $3 million, and they are recycling approximately 4 to 5% of the total garbage arriving at the landfill through that kind of cost. The problem is twofold. We're a long ways from the markets in this state. Recycling, at best, is very dependent on the economies of the marketplace. And right now in the state, the only thing that I know of that makes much economic sense to try to ship out is aluminum cans. Most of it is just about a break-even point. If you try to say that we, instead of trying to deregulate the industry, we should recycle more and therefore reduce our waste, the fact is, if the markets aren't there, you're not going to recycle it. The Eastern Seaboard experience has shown that just because you put in place a law that recycles a lot doesn't mean that you get recycling. The biggest mistake supposedly made nationwide is the fact that there are statewide laws and municipal laws mandating recycling and the markets aren't there. And so they have, in some places, warehouses full of recycled newspapers they can't get rid of, for example. The one area that is more or less unregulated in Alaska is the waste processing industry. There is clear regulation on the transport of solid waste. There's clear regulation on the disposal. It's not real clear who regulates a plant that might process garbage and then send it on to a landfill. Now, because this is more of an environmental, potentially more of an environmental liability than an economic issue, probably the DEC regulations should apply. But the bottom line is that by saying that we can trade increased recycling and reduce our problems here, and in exchange we should have continued regulation of the transport industry for garbage, there's no comparison there. One's a disposal issue mainly, the other is a transportation issue. Look at my notes just a second. I guess that concludes my remarks. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Joyce. Interface.
I'm real curious. You keep referring to that the collection is separate from the disposal. Do you know of any firm in the state who collects the garbage and then hands it over to some other person to dispose of the garbage?
I guess it depends on your definition of disposal. The certificates they're issued are called collection disposal garbage. Yet, the fact is that to dispose of garbage, ultimate disposal, requires a landfill permit from DEC. It's not something that if you get a certificate from the PUC, you can go out and throw garbage anywhere.
Okay, but wait a minute. Let's talk about what's practically going on in the state, okay? Do you know of any business person who is in the garbage collection business who isn't also, what are they doing with it if they aren't also in the disposal business?
I only know of one business in the state that does do that, and I think that's in Juneau here. Most everybody else gets the garbage and then hauls it to a municipal landfill where it's disposed of, and they pay a tipping fee in many places.
Oh, that's what you mean. Well, they pick it up and then they haul it to the dump,
right?
And you say that's a different function?
When I talk about disposal, I mean the actual burial in the ground.
Well, so you think that if you deregulate, then there are more people, that will encourage more people to run around picking up trash, and that will somehow lower the prices, but they're all still going to the dump.
That's correct. You've got two economic issues there. You have one of how much it costs to run the dump or the landfill, which is independent of
who
how many people
the dump
are doing
in Fairbanks, Burl.
We have a private Burl contractor does. Operating it right now under contract for us, but we own the landfill.
Okay, and do you charge the collection people for dumping?
We do now. We just set a tipping fee starting in 1987 at $21 a ton.
Well, then they must go to the APUC and ask for a
landfill and has the responsibility to maintain that under the DEC permit. One of the reasons why he's concerned about this too, because then that would put his landfill program into jeopardy, because then everybody would say, well, I want to bring my pickup boat in there. And there would be no revenues for maintaining that landfill.
I think they'd probably be charged you, but I suspect that they brought a pickup boat full of garbage into your landfill in Fairbanks. They'd be charged for that, wouldn't they?
Some landfills do. Right now, the contract specifically exempts residential-type dumping from a tipping fee because our borough assembly wanted that exempted.
What's the dumpster system? What do you mean by that?
Okay, we have about 18 sites around the borough, and at each of those sites, a big box is put, a metal container ranging anywhere from 35 yards up to 80 yards, cubic yards of capacity. People pay a non-area-wide tax for that service. They go throw their trash in there, and then one of the certificated haulers, whoever's area it is in, goes, picks it up, hauls it to landfill, dumps it, and takes it back. And for that, we pay the hauling fee and, of course, the tipping fee also.
You mean you have 1,000 different cars driving up and dumping into the dumpster?
That's correct.
That's where they collect it. Instead of getting it at your door, you take your trash to the dumpster.
Mr. Chair,
what a way to run this
one. They have them in areas.
That's because
they
live in the city.
They have them sitting in areas within the borough, and people just take their refuge on their way to work or whatever and flip it into the dumpster.
Okay, I guess the second question would be, if in fact they were deregulated tomorrow, how would the system change? The people would be still taking their garbage to the dumpster, right?
That's correct.
And then you would contract with someone else, the lowest bidder, or whatever.
We would be able to go in with a competitive bidding process and with enough language in there so that we get someone that can do the job. In other words, it wouldn't just be low bid, it would be based on performance standards. We would then be able to have them under contract, and if there's a performance problem, we could handle it as a contractual matter.
Can't you put them under contract now?
They have no incentive to sign a contract. They don't have to. They are the only ones we can hire to haul from that area. If we hire anybody else, we'll be in a lawsuit because under the regulations, nobody else can haul from those areas. They have a legal monopoly in those areas.
Senator Fakes?
Authorized by the APUC?
That's correct.
And the APUC, for how long?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Susan Knowles on. Any further questions? Thank you. Next we have Tom Bosker. How do you pronounce that?
Bedeker.
Tom from Kenai Peninsula Borough. Just press your switch forward there and you're on.
I'm going to go get a coat.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Thomas Bedeker. I'm the borough attorney of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I'm here for Mayor Gilman this afternoon. He's tied up in matters connected to Wellsville and could not make it to Juneau this week. I'd like to state that we agree with a number of the statements that are made with some of the issues and concerns by the previous testifier, Mr. Joy. Kenai Peninsula Borough supports Senate Bill 298. We believe deregulation of waste collection and hauling as proposed in the bill is appropriate and will not adversely affect service or cost to the public. Currently, the effect of regulating the hauling is to create a monopoly situation in most municipalities. Municipality cannot negotiate or bid contracts for hauling and collection services in any realistic fashion in that type of situation. In the Kenai Borough, there are basically two types of hauling and collection services. One is home pickup service, which is not provided under borough ordinance or authority. The borough does provide for collection sites with large containers, often called roll-off or transfer boxes. That's what Mr. Joy was referring to earlier. The borough maintains and operates its own solid waste landfills. The carrier is responsible only for transporting the collection boxes to the landfill and emptying them and hauling them back to the site. In our situation, entry into hauling transfer boxes is regulated and requires a certificate. But by Public Utility Commission decision, the rates for hauling are not regulated. Rate changes are implemented by filing a new tariff with the APUC. The borough has no realistic means to object or appeal any increases or contest them in any fashion. It is not possible to negotiate a stable long-term agreement in these circumstances. We believe this type of regulation protects the provider and not the public. Under under a pending rate increase filing, the rates for hauling the transfer boxes in the borough would increase by 25%. Because funds are limited, the borough will be reducing services to the taxpayers by closing a number of collection sites to offset these increased hauling costs. The situation on entry and regulation at the Joy Estate varies from municipality to municipality. Sometimes the variations are due to unique circumstances in each area, sometimes they're not. Our position is that rather than try to regulate through the APUC all of these conditions and set that, we support deregulation to allow local needs and market conditions to determine the nature of services and how they're priced. Essentially, you had some questions earlier about transfer boxes. Kenai Peninsula Borough uses the same system. We cover about 16,000 square miles of land, a lot of it rural. There's no door-to-door service, and we're not providing that. We have a number of transfer boxes. The hauling distances are significant. The cost, I'm not sure the current cost to that, but our fee to the rates right now for the transfer box haulers is somewhere in the vicinity of $500,000 a year. We do not charge any tipping fees or dumping fees at the landfills. We operate seven landfills, some in Tyonic, English Bay, Port Graham. The most of the hauling area is Seward, Homer, Kenai, and the rest of the Kenai Peninsula. That's what we're dealing with. We're concerned with the situation we find ourselves in. There is no effective competition. There's no incentive to enter into any kind of an agreement with us for long-term rate stability. We can't go bid. There's no other person to bid. Somebody who wanted to bid could theoretically go get a permit from the APUC, but that's a lengthy process. That's our real concern here. We're not in the business. We're not interested in starting hauling ourselves. We don't even operate our own landfills. We contract that out. We're interested in long-term contractual situation, but we feel that the present situation regulates one end and creates problems on the entry and creates problems with us on the rate structure.
Thank you, Senator Fix.
Are you satisfied with the quality of work of your haulers, your collectors?
Senator Fakes, other than the routine type of complaints you'll get along the way that seem normal, I have no dissatisfaction or know of nothing there. From our standpoint, I don't think it's a question of service.
Okay.
In the transfer, all they're doing is the hauling. We do the cleanup of our own collection sites, okay, and maintenance of those.
You want garbage collection to be cheaper?
I would like to see, yes, cheaper, or that there be a competitive nature to it when we try to enter our agreements.
Okay. So, does your person, and I don't know who it is, I can't remember who it was this morning. Has Sky invested, do you know, in any trucks and stuff like that? Or does he just have a fleet of pickups?
The equipment that he uses in connection with the hauling is the roll-off trucks, I guess you'd call them. They're a large truck. They're expensive piece of equipment. They're about $100,000, maybe somewhere between $75,000 and $125,000 a piece. It's my understanding that in the last few years, since the current owner bought the corporation, that he has brought several new trucks, two new trucks, I believe, has some older equipment, but that's the mainstay of that. The transfer boxes are owned, provided by the borough for our site. It's my understanding they have equipment for transfer boxes for other commercial locations, shopping centers, and the like.
Okay, well, if somebody comes in, and let's say we deregulate this particular industry, and someone comes in and you put out a bid for garbage, and somebody wants to put those guys out of business, and they come in with maybe older equipment or used equipment or borrowed equipment from Jack and Anchorage or who knows where they get their equipment, and they win the contract, and maybe they're not satisfactory. They put Sky out of business. You're not happy with your service. These guys take the contract for a year and go away. Sky's gone, and the Kenai Borough is in the garbage business.
Well, Senator Fakes, I guess in some respects that you have to trust the ability of the local officials to write contract specifications that deal
trust
with
government?
That. Yes. And just to give you an idea, we do not deal in one-year contracts on our items like this. We tend to deal in five-year contracts, long-term contracts for stability is what we see.
Excuse me. I can't understand why you can't tell Sky right now. Sky, the borough budget is kaputs. we cannot pay $1 more than this amount for garbage collection. That's it.
Senator, we could do that, but that requires equal bargaining position. What happens if he says no? What are our options? We have no options. We pay what rate he is. We can't enter the market without buying him out. We're not interested in going into the business. We're not interested in competing with private enterprise on our own operation. We have no effective way to deal with it other than to buy him out, because there is no competitor if he refuses to agree to our terms or something we're willing to pay.
You have no option at all?
That's what the public utility
does. Yeah, can't you go to the public utilities office and say, hey, this creep won't do our garbage here? And
the Public Utilities Commission has already deregulated the rates in this area. We don't get to object to rate filings. That's our point here. That system does not make sense. We can comment, but there's no protest mechanism for a normal rate structure. The commission has to approve a tariff, but it's not under the same system that you'd have as justifying a rate increase in the normal process you think of when you hear about electric utilities.
Sir Coggan?
Well, maybe we have to get the commissioner, Mrs. Knowles, and we'll find out. Susan will tell us, but it would seem to me that that's the prime function of the Public Utilities Commission, is to allow you, if you feel that you're aggrieved in the structure and the public utility, and the reason for the monopoly is to allow that spreads the rate charge across the board, so that the people that are in the outreaches are not being penalized for the ones that are on in the metropolitan areas. That if you don't have that ability, it seems to me that we need to talk to the utility commission.
Senator Coghill, in response, and I say I think that's one of the problems we're concerned, because we have an order that in the largest service area, there are three certificates all held by the same company in three different areas, Homer, Seward, and the Keene-Hasseldotten area. And one of them, they've been specifically deregulated as to rate by order. They file. The commission still has to approve them, but it does not go through the normal rate review and justification process. The other areas, I think, are still subject to regulations, but they may be under threshold limits for dollar volume that affect that as well.
Senator Coggan?
Have you, as the borough, made formal inquiry or formal protest to the Utility Commission on the rates and the charges that are in these three different areas?
No, not to the recent filing. That notice has been there, and the Assembly or Mayor have taken no direction to deal with that, other than it appears under the regulation or deregulation that we have to go through a petition process to get the Commission to re-regulate rates in that area, and it seems that was overly complicated, which was a concern of ours. The alternative was to accept the rate increase as it is and reduce the number of sites.
Senator Fakes?
You have three different areas in the Kenai where there's garbage being picked up.
Maybe, Senator, let me explain that. Originally, there were three different companies that had certificates, and through the last 15 years or so, all three of those companies were acquired under single ownership, and when Mr. Sky Carver acquired ownership of those companies, he reformed them into a single company, but their operating areas were still under the various permits.
So they have three operating permits?
That's correct.
And I bet you one of them is more profitable than the others?
I would suspect that is absolutely correct.
Okay.
It's a larger population.
Okay, so, right. A larger population, closer population, probably easier to pick up.
I would not agree with that. The largest area deals runs from Cooper Landing into Soldotna out to Nikiski. The hauling distances on some of our transfer boxes are 10 to 20 to greater miles. I think one of them is actually 44 miles hauling distance to our landfills. And we're going to be closing one of those landfills, so some of the transfer site hauling distances will double in the next year, 2 years.
If you you're supportive of this, and this gets deregulated, if this bill should pass, do you feel that someone else, a competitor in the Kenai, would put in a bid for all three areas, or would just pick the one that they think is the most lucrative and the easiest to break in?
Depends on how we put it out to bid. As for our operators in certain types of functions, say snow plowing, we've broken into areas so the people are in those areas. I would suspect that we would look in centralized locations around vintage units, around the landfills where they would be dumped, and probably break it into units, probably much similar to what we have now.
Well, but wouldn't you think it was somebody new breaking in, they'd want to go after the most profitable unit?
That's always true. That's human nature.
Sure. Okay. And that is human nature, and you're right. So then what happens to your old standby garbage collector who's got the two less profitable units left?
Well, I guess that we could always bid it as a unit if that turned out to be a problem.
Okay. Always raise the rates.
Raise the rates in that area.
How do you handle your billing?
The billing for the hauling of the transfer boxes is basically the routes have been established and worked out a number of years ago what the hauling time was. There were some issues, and that was pretty agreeably worked out about 5 years ago. And it's billed just flat the number of trips. Each trip is...
I don't mean with the haulers. I'm talking about the consumers.
It's strictly tax supported. There are no fees.
There are no fees?
That's right.
So when the garbage rate goes up, it's not specifically each person. It's just part of the tax structure.
That's correct.
You can blame it all on the garbage people then, right?
Well, they can't work anything. We have a fee.
That, Mr. Chairman, that's a pretty good deal.
Raise taxes.
I pay $35 a month for each business, and I pay $15 a month for my customers.
We have some sort of deal. Jack, what is it on the hillside, $42.50 for 3 months or a quarter or something? I mean, it's
about
incredible.
$13-$14 a month.
I mean, they pick up everything.
I guess I have one question maybe I should ask Susan. No, listen, maybe you'd know. If they were deregulated, could the local boroughs and cities pick up the regulation process?
There's authority under the statutes to do that under Title 29, and for rates and service that we provided, it, yes, it could be. There's some question about, you know, there's always questions when you're interpreting laws, but it's clear that for our own services that we provided to contract or franchises or whatever, that those can be regulated without looking at the statute. I hesitate to venture that we can regulate private carriers, but I suspect we can under the authority granted us.
Dr. Stevens said specifically that state government could probably do a better job than local government. I was serious to question that, but nevertheless, that's what you said.
I do have a comment in that. I wasn't sure what types of states they were looking at, and the Connecticut, where she was testifying from, doesn't even fill a fair-sized portion of our borough. And we're only the fifth largest borough in Alaska.
But they have a lot more customers than you have. Thank you. Susan Knowles in Anchorage?
Would you like me to offer some preliminary remarks or just answer questions? What is your pleasure?
Just tell us why you want to deregulate then, please.
Okay. As has been suggested by an earlier witness, the whole issue of whether the commission should be in the business of regulating garbage has been on the table, if you will, for a number of years. It's come to the attention of the legislature in at least three prior sunset audits involving the commission, and in those audits, the legislative audit division has consistently recommended, and we have consistently supported their recommendation that we be out of the garbage business. I think there are a number of reasons for this. One is simply the characteristics of the industry, the fact that it is not a natural monopoly that is capital intensive in the sense that most utility businesses are that we regulate. Two, as has also been referenced, the commission has in recent years been evaluating whether or not the monopoly model is appropriate in any event for the garbage utility business and has moved towards a competitive model in at least the Matanuska Susitna Borough. We've also got a competitor that is authorized within the Kenai Peninsula service area and one that is authorized in Juneau, although the existing provider has appealed their decision, so that operator is not currently in business. Another issue that we face also has been referenced by earlier witnesses, and it involves the fact that we presently do not regulate landfills, incinerators, et cetera. And as a result, depending, of course, on the particular operating mode of the refuse utility, we find ourselves only really able to effectively evaluate and control some of the operating expenses of the utilities. And other elements tend to be outside of our control, and they are nonetheless a substantial part of the cost of doing business. As you probably also know, the existing statute does not have the commission economically regulate any garbage utility that makes less than $200,000 a year. As a result, only 9 of the 43 utilities that are certificated to be in this business are actually economically regulated by the commission. What that means is, of course, a lot of service areas, unless a competitor has appeared on the scene and gone through and successfully acquired a certificate, you have monopoly providers who are not economically regulated under the statute. We also believe that the role that is currently played by or is permissible to be played by local governments as well as the Department of Environmental Conservation is sufficient to look after the public's interest in this area. I think that probably sort of summarizes the factors that have come to our attention, which make us believe that we look at our relatively scarce resources to perform our job as the regulatory agency for the state. We believe on balance that regulation of garbage is adequately handled in other arenas, and that we would serve the public interest better if we focused on other more traditional, typically monopoly forms of utility activities. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I have one relative to the filing of proposed rates now. If in fact you don't regulate them economically, why should they file a rate schedule with the commission?
I am not hearing anything. Is my transmission coming across?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Commissioner Knowles, this is Matt Sue, and we heard you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Knowles, apparently our Juno is not transmitting very well. Can you hear me now? Okay. I'm going to put you back in teleconference as well. I'm going to try this. Can you hear me now?
Susan?
Commissioner Knowles, can you hear us?
State, make a statement that you're going to abolish the commission, then she'll hear you.
Hey, we had to deregulate the phone lines. Susan?
Teleconferences aren't regulated.
It's another way.
Owned by the state, that's the reason.
What I can do is hang up and call back and encourage you.
Go ahead.
I'm going to call back into Virginia.
Technology.
You can also ask.
I am confused on this issue.
You are.
You're what?
Confused.
You know what we do.
Are you there? Can you hear us?
Try my mic. Maybe it's your mic. Why don't you try mine?
Susan?
Can you hear this one? Didn't want to answer your question.
Somebody, we have a...
Get up to the moderator and anchor. If you're speaking, we are not receiving any of the conversation.
Can you hear us now?
Can you hear us now, Ines?
This is like early response. Well,
Thomas.
And can you hear this microphone?
I hope they don't use the same system for national defense.
A long enough cord. Can you hear this one now?
Can you hear this microphone?
Yes, I can.
This one?
Ask if she can hear you, please.
Commissioner Knowles, can you hear?
Yes, she might.
Commissioner Knowles, can you hear?
No, she won't be able to.
Okay. Continue, Michael, sorry.
Okay. I'm the Massachusetts Borough Attorney, and Mayor Jones let me know this hearing was taking place this afternoon. So I thought I'd drop by and say hello to you folks and let you know that Massachusetts Borough has been involved in garbage since about, maybe 1964, but collection and disposal of garbage since about 1983. And we've affectionately termed our interaction with the haulers and the APUC as the Massachusetts Garbage Wars. And the basic issue is whether to allow the Massachusetts Borough to come in and provide essential public health, safety, and welfare services.
For your information, Joanne, I can hear you disconnecting and reconnecting the microphone.
Continue.
That is garbage collection and disposal for its citizens. And just to make the record clear, we're not interested in going door to door and picking up residential service. We have a situation where we have dumpsters that are situated in various strategic locales throughout the borough, which, by the way, encompasses 23,000 square miles. So I don't know how relevant the Connecticut experience or studies in other states may be with respect to a regulatory structure for keeping costs lower in that type of situation. If the committee would like, I can make copies of my files on the amount of time I've spent in front of the APUC in drafting briefs and other items with respect to this issue. And what's happened as a result of all those efforts is that the Massachusetts Borough has been successful in obtaining a certificate of public convenience and necessity, which is the certificate that the APUC issues to enable an entity to operate within a particular area, service area, if you will, because that's what we're looking at. We're looking at service areas that the APUC certifies and makes findings that the individuals that are serving these areas are fit, willing, and able to serve the public convenience and necessity for the public health, safety, and welfare. The APUC has seen fit to deregulate refuse collection and disposal outside what they've termed the typical core area for the hauler that's located in the Massachusetts Borough. We received a number of competitive proposals, or competitive responses in response to our proposal, and the rates for picking up our transfer sites within those locales have gone down substantially. We are still precluded from allowing other haulers to operate within the core area of the traditional hauler simply because the hauler has always come into this our exclusive area. And if you come in and regulate us, you'd be allowing cream skimming, which is what Senator Fakes was referring to, and also the carrier of last resort's ability to provide the service would be jeopardized, and this argument would cause, or this position would cause the residents of the area not to receive refuse collection and disposal. Well, in response to that particular issue, there was a loss, an opinion that came down from Judge Andrews, and I'll be happy to provide this committee with a copy of that opinion. I said the carrier of last resort analysis is not a compelling reason, and in fact, equal protection rights are violated by claiming that the carrier of last resort argument would preclude other haulers from entering into this particular area. So what we have is sort of a two-tiered competitive scheme, at least in the Massachusetts Borough, where we have deregulation outside the core area, regulation in the core area. We see the model working very well outside the core area, and we'd like to move it into the entire area. And we have people that are standing by, willing to bid. And we think that there's, in a time of fiscal crisis, when we're trying to provide municipal services, basic municipal services, for the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of our taxpayers, we should be allowed to competitively bid inside and outside the core areas. Now, again, when you look to the APUC's orders, which are very, very confusing to read, and the APUC has admirably grappled with this issue since 1983 and has come down with a number of orders, and and I'd be happy to provide the committee with all of those orders as well, if you have a couple of days to read them. The orders also indicate that there's two methodologies for procuring a certificate, and the methodology you follow depends upon the type of certificate you want. If you want to provide residential service, you have to meet one set of criteria. If you want to provide commercial service, you have to meet another set of criteria, and then that criteria again is determined by whether it's inside or outside the traditional hauler's core area. So there's a very complicated process that individuals need to go through depending on where they want to haul or obtain a certificate. But under the APUC's order, anybody can operate under our certificate. So as long as you're outside the core area within the Matanuska Susitna Borough providing commercial service for dumpsters, you can get a certificate of public convenience and necessity almost pro forma simply by filing an application. As Commissioner Knowles noted, the monopolistic scheme for refuse is sort of anathema to the free marketplace concept that competition is the rule in the United States. And in fact, we have laws that disallow the attempt to eliminate competition. They're called antitrust laws. Now, a certificate of public convenience and necessity that allows a monopoly is based upon the principle that it's capital intensive to provide a service, so as a result of some entity, for example, an electric utility, telephone utility, or et cetera, providing this service, will grant some type of monopolistic status to ensure that the service can continue, because not many people can afford to come into this type of an environment and be competitive. So that's the trade-off. I guess one of the major points is what public policy is served by allowing competition or no competition for refuse. And I can't really think of any, because I think there are people in the Matsu Borough that are willing to come in and provide refuse services for a price lower than that being provided by traditional carriers. And in fact, we've seen that to be exactly the case in the area that, in essence, has been deregulated. Now, at least at this time, I don't believe that the Matsu Borough is interested in regulating anybody. The way that we handle our refuse collection and disposal is through a contractual arrangement whereby we establish a set of performance criteria, provide to the bidder the requirement that they be the lowest qualified, responsive, and responsible bidder, which means that they have to have trucks that are safe, that perform, they have to meet certain standards, they have to be qualified to provide the service, and they have to have a good price. And it's been working real well so far in the area that has been deregulated. I could probably go on and talk to you for several hours about refuse, but I don't think you want to hear it. So I'll conclude with the statement that we believe that the free marketplace should allow competition in this area. Government regulation, you usually hear people crying, we don't want government regulation. In this case, we have the reverse. Give us government regulation. And I guess the question is why? We support the repeal of the regulation of the refuse collection and disposal in the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Gatt.
Senator Gatti is my name, G-A-T-T-I. My handwriting is atrocious.
It is. I'll let you a prescription here. Can you hear us in Anchorage?
Yes.
Fine. Welcome back aboard.
Yeah, I don't know if there are others in Anchorage.
Senator Fakes?
Yes, there are other people waiting to speak.
Well, just a moment. We just want to know if you're online. Senator Fakes had a question, I believe, for Mr.
That's right. There are other people. I'll pass.
Okay, fine. I had a question for Susan Knowles.
Yes, sir.
I guess I have two questions. One, is there a provision in law at the present time which allows an opt-out, say by referendum, by a petition or something relative to, well, I think when some other utilities we have that provision. Do we have that as relates to the carriers?
I have to say no in this sense. I believe the provision you're referring to would allow all utilities except electric and telephone, if I my memory serves me, who make less than $100,000 a year to have a deregulation election. And in this case, all refuse utilities are already exempted from economic regulation under the law if they make less than $200,000 a year. So, in effect, the law is already more liberal than the deregulation election provision.
All right, then the second question, I believe, is that they do file a rate schedule with you then, and is that approved or just put in a file?
Well, if they are one of the nine of 43 refuse utilities that are fully economically regulated by the commission, then if they wish to change their rates, they have to file that request with us together with the supporting financial documentation that's required under our regulations, and we then would proceed to evaluate the numbers and have a full proceeding on the request and make a decision based on a record that's developed in that proceeding.
I assume you have procedure for challenging those particular requests. Normally, how long does it take to go through this process?
Well, it depends. We've had a couple of cases in the Fairbanks, involving Fairbanks refuge utilities fairly recently, where, in fact, the commission, in part because of a complaint that was filed by the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and in part based on a petition filed by our own staff, initiated a proceeding into whether or not the rates were excessive or not. And that proceeding took a couple of years to ultimately resolve. So a circumstance like that where you kind of have to bring the company to the table and to, in effect, force them to do a certain financial analysis so you can evaluate whether the rates are proper, will take longer than a situation where a company believes that it should increase its rates in order to meet its current obligations, in which case they, of course, initiate the action, and we attempt to resolve those within 6 months, but I think it's probably safe to say that it frequently takes more than a year if a full public hearing is required.
When that rate approval is, if that is approved, then can they go back retroactive to the time of the filing of collect?
Well, looking at the two situations separately, the situation where we thought we had a problem with excessive rates, we on our own made the rates interim refundable as soon as we identified the problem, and then went about the exercise of figuring out what the rates would be. And it turned out that, in fact, the rates were too high and they did need to be reduced, and the utility has had to refund monies from the time we first identified the problem. In the other situation where a company comes to us and asks for a rate increase, it's very typical for the company to also ask for an interim rate increase while the full case is being processed. And those interim rate increases are normally granted within 45 days of the filing coming to us. And one of the conditions of an interim is, of course, that if it turns out to be excessive, after we've gone through our full analysis, that any excess monies collected will go back to the consumers. But in the meantime, it does give the companies an element of protection while the regulatory process grinds along.
Thank you, Senator Coghill.
Susan, this is Senator Coghill. Have you had proceedings before the commission from the different boroughs that have testified here that they have no relief through the commission to get to excessive rates for the haulers?
I am generally familiar with the concerns that they have raised, and taking, for example, the Fairbanks situation, there are at present only two providers, I believe, who are authorized to serve the borough. At one point there was another provider, but that utility was bought out by one of the two existing utilities. And they have total monopolies up there, and in the absence of either the borough exercising its right to buy out one of the providers or someone expressing an interest and going into business in competition with an existing provider, Fairbanks is correct. They basically only have one utility that they can turn to meet this refuse service. The Matsu Borough situation is a little bit more diverse, as was suggested, but there is still one relatively small but nonetheless important area that still does have a partial monopoly in it, and the issue of whether it should be retained as a monopoly is presently pending before the commission in some cases, and will be addressed, I would assume, this fall. But so the bottom line is I do concur and I do understand, I think, most of the comments that have been made by both of those boroughs.
I guess I didn't put my question. Have you had proceedings from the Kenai, Matsu? I know you have from the Fairbanks, but do you have not the right to look at their rates and to reduce them if the haulers are too high in your estimation?
With respect to the Matsu Borough, I certainly believe that's correct. I am not familiar, and apparently I can only assume I was not one of the participating commissioners, with respect to the situation that's been described on the Kenai Peninsula, where there is partial deregulation of a service to the Kenai boroughs or city that would otherwise be regulated. I'm simply not personally familiar with that. I know we've had very recently a request by that garbage utility to have its services deregulated in the area where we allow competition. And the commission declined to allow that deregulation because we did not believe at this point that there was a sufficient showing that there was real competition. We have a very new provider and they haven't gotten their feet on the ground, et cetera. So we still have substantial market power in the hands of the previous monopoly provider. So I'm not familiar with the Kenai Peninsula situation.
Thank you, Susan. Did Barbara Collins wish to testify, please, in Anchorage?
She has left.
Karen Woods?
He has left.
Tom Turner is the only one left in Anchorage.
How about Tom Turner?
I'm here. Would you like me to begin?
Thank you for your patience. Proceed.
My name is Tom Turner. I'm general manager of the Anchorage Recycling Center. The Anchorage Recycling Center is probably the major force of currently shipping recycled goods out of Alaska in general. We have over 32 employees. We shipped out, I believe, last year close to 4% to 6% of the total Anchorage waste stream. We have operated totally as an independent body insofar as we used to be a nonprofit organization, and due to the capitalization of Anchorage Refuse, had the ability to do the economics of scale to move material. I think what we're dealing with here is a couple of issues more than just whether garbage should be deregulated and whether or not there's some problems in certain areas. What's happened is Alaskans, the world in general, has not taken responsibility for their trash. They're assuming someone else should take care of it. And what happens is we need to start realizing that whoever generates that trash is ultimately responsible for it. If we took that attitude, what would happen is a true cost of disposal would be put in place. Several situations are starting to develop where that happened. Everyone's well familiar with the barge that floated up and down the East Coast. What has happened is the EPA, US EPA, has made recommendations to put in some very stringent landfills. The reasons, of course, are significant health and safety considerations, and of course, the protection of the environment. In Anchorage, they saw these things coming, and they put in a landfill that was capable of handling all these costs, and they passed it on to users' fees to the people involved, the citizens in general, the businesses that generate trash. What has happened is a marked increase in recycling activity.